about you, or write a book about you, or take a picture of you, or brag on you? What if that happens? William Borden lay dying on his way to the mission field as a graduate of Yale, never to arrive where he wanted to arrive, to pour his heart out for God as a missionary. Someone wrote him and said, "Don't you regret having given up fame and fortune and on your way to something that seems to us be such a ridiculous prospect to find yourself dying?" And he wrote them back these words: "No remorse, no regret, no retreat. I'm not sorry," he said, "but come to the cross." Listen. If there are to be any changes in this nation by which God uses preachers, he will use preachers who have come to the cross, who have laid aside human, personal ambitions and agendas and aspirations and said, "God, I've got one thing in mind. What do you want with my life? What do you want me to say? How can I speak as an oracle of God?" Men who are not so focused on losing tax exemption that they fail to speak prophetically and convictionally in the pulpit. What would you have me do? Where would you have me go? How would you have me serve? Well, not only is the crucified life imperative for your spiritual progress and illustrated by this simple picture, but it is indicative that you have a scriptural perspective. As we were praying yesterday, Patricia, I believe it was, said, part of the Lord's Prayer is, "Thy kingdom come," but it seems that so much of the praying today is, "My kingdom come." We're in it for us. Preachers, can you imagine this? Preachers, no wonder people think of preachers and treat us like they do. Preachers who wade into churches with this thought on my mind: how can I negotiate the best package possible? Listen, guys, it is one thing for Jesus to suffer and bleed and die a cruel and ignominious death on the cross of Calvary. It's another thing for you to figure out how much money you can make telling that story. When you die, it indicates that you have a scriptural perspective. All of a sudden, you have awakened to the fact that your life on this earth is just a blip on the radar screen. Listen to what the Lord says: "He that loves his life shall lose it. He that hates his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal." Earlier he had said, "What shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" The answer is nothing. God doesn't want anything except me. What can I give him but the cross? Nothing. Well, let me give you a little suffering. Let me give you a little inconvenience. He says, "What I want is you. What I want is you." One day I was seated with a circle of pastors on the outskirts of Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, and we were talking about going down to a little village where there had been a lot of fighting and starting up restarting a church that had been in existence and closed down because of the guerrilla warfare. And the men said, "You know, there's nobody to go down there. It's too intense. They're fighting." And I said, "Well, let's just pray to the Lord of the harvest." And one of the old men stood up and said, "Well, you can pray all you want, but nobody is stupid enough to go down there." After our prayer meeting, a young man limped over to me. He had had polio as a boy, and his name was Sabalao Madumba. Sabalao means killer, Madumba. Sabalao said to me, "Mfundis," he said, I'll be that preacher. He said, "Now, it's hard for me to walk, and I'm going to live about 8 miles from where that little church is." And he said, "If you'll bring me a bicycle," he said, "I'll ride it out there, and I'll minister to those people." He said, it's difficult with this limp. And I said, so Blau, you go ahead and move down there. I'll bring your bicycle. Well, I didn't know how seriously he was taking me. You know, I messed around. 2 or 3 weeks later, I found a bicycle, put it in my van, drove down there. So Blau said, Funes, where have you been? I said, well, what do you mean? He said, I've been walking out there. He said, walking out on Wednesday, 8 miles, walking back late at night, walking out on Saturdays and walking back, walking out on Sundays and walking back. He said, my leg is killing me. He said, but we have a lot of people that are ready to be baptized. I said, so Blau. I said, so Blau, don't tell me you've been walking up and down that road by yourself. I said, yesterday a Salvation Army missionary was killed on that road, and the day before a man was shot off the top of a bus, and he looked at me and said, Fundus, if God can stop the mouths of the lions for Daniel, he can stop the muzzles of the guns for so Blau. What was he saying? I've died. You can't kill me. I'm already dead. The best thing you can do is to usher me as a dead man into the presence of a living Jesus. When you choose to die to your ambitions, to your agenda, to your affections, when you open that suitcase in a few moments and hold this up and say, where did I get that? Who gave me that attitude? Who brought that bitterness into my life? And you put that to the cross and say, wait a minute, that can't pass the cross. Christ died for that. I must live on the other side of the cross. It indicates you have a scriptural perspective on life. He that loves his life shall lose it. But he who hates his life in this world shall find it unto life eternal. By the way, the crucified life is also inherent in the servant's position. I can just tell you that you and I can't serve Jesus apart from the crucified life. There's not anything else he wants. Notice what he says, if any man serve me, let him follow me. Where I am, there shall also my servant be. Where was he? On the cross. I'll tell you guys, ladies, it's time for the world to see Christian servants. We'd rather do almost anything except carry the towel and the basin and wash feet. We'd like ours washed. We'd like to have an engraved basin and a monogrammed towel that others can use while they wash our feet. So many of us want to get someplace big so we can do less and have more time to ourselves. Where did that come from? Where did that come from? If any man follow me, or if any man would serve me, let him follow me. Where I am, there will my servant be. I'm on the cross, there's where my servant is supposed to be. The servant is not greater than the master, Jesus once said. If the cross is in my life, do you think it can be any less in your life? I was in Nairobi, Kenya some time ago and teaching a group of pastors, and at the end of a class, one of the pastors said, I'd like to take you down and show you my place of business. I'll be honest with you, the last thing I wanted was to go see his place of business. I mean, it was one of those hot days. You know, it's just 3 degrees off the equator, and I was just drenching wet. I was tired. I hadn't slept very well. Electricity had gone off. I didn't have that fan blowing on me, you know. And I was just miserable, and I was wondering whether I really wanted to serve Jesus there anyway. He said, please come with me. Reluctantly, I said, all right, let's go. He said, now we're going to have to walk. That was even worse. We walk. I kept looking up to see if I could find his name on any of the buildings. And all of a sudden he said, well, here it is. I said, where? He said, here. I said, oh, there. 2 barrels, a board, a canvas covering some crummy, really crummy souvenirs. I was sort of angry. I said, you know, to myself, that guy has brought me into the guts of Mombasa so that he can sell me some souvenirs. Boy, how self-seeking. I'm over here to serve Jesus. and he's dragged me down here to sell me souvenirs. Bad souvenirs, too. It'd be better if I could take them home. I don't even want them. He said, isn't this wonderful? I said, what do you mean? This business. I couldn't think of much to say. I tried to make conversation. I said, well, I bet you see a lot of people come and go in all the years you've been here. He said, oh, I haven't been here very long. I said, oh, really? What did you used to do? He said, I was a supervisor at the Leyland. That's like the General Motors plant. He said, I was a supervisor at the Leyland plant. I wanted to say, you idiot, why did you give up a job like... And I said, I'm not dumb. I said, what caused you to change your profession? He said, I'm a member of a little church here, and we never did have a pastor, and we began praying that God would bring a pastor, and God started speaking to their heart, and he started speaking to my heart, and it was God's will for me to be the pastor. And he said, you know, the people at Leyland don't understand. The shepherd has to be available to go to the sheep when the sheep need him, and he said, they didn't understand. And my wife and I began praying that God would just let us have enough that she and I and our large family could just eat. That's all. Just eat. Isn't this wonderful? God has given us a way to eat, and I can be the pastor of my church. The cross is just inherent in the servant's position. One last observation. The cross is the impulse of a selfless person. It's just, you hit that spot on your knee and you're... The cross is just the impulse of a selfless person. Most of us have to think long and hard, do I really want to let go of that? Do I really want to give up my time? Do I really want to do that alone? I mean, how much of what you do for God would you do for God anyway if only God saw it? Do I really want to visit because I care? I'd rather just visit that hospital because if I don't, they're going to be upset. So I... and propel through my ministerial life by guilt rather than by ministry and selflessness. The cross is just the impulse of a selfless person. My soul is troubled, Jesus said. What shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. No, it's for this hour I came. What I'll say is this, Father, glorify your name. When we were living in Zimbabwe, that brief period of time, there was a lady who worked in our house, Ma Ndlovu. Her last name was Ndlovu, elephant. Ma, mother elephant. Wonderful lady, raised her family after her husband had abandoned her. Great saint of God. What a grasp on the brevity of life. While we were there, in a matter of weeks, 7 of her relatives slaughtered just needlessly, stupidly. Mondlovu wanted one thing on this earth. She wanted what was called a stand out in a nearby township. Just a piece of ground. Honestly, the piece of ground is only about half as big as this choir loft. Literally, about half. You just cut it into, you just got a little house on it. All the houses are just like cracker, every one of them looks alike. No water on the inside, no plumbing on the inside. One plug on the inside if they did have electricity. She wanted her place on this earth. And every week on Thursday, she would take off from work. She would go down and stand in line with thousands of others, and they would say to her, no, sorry, we don't have a stand for you. No, sorry, we don't have a stand for you. And she'd come home disappointed. One day, she came home. She was just ebullient. She would just, in fact, she had a little piece of paper on her shoulder, and she was running through the house. That's the way they have of saying in Zimbabwe, this is a weighty big deal. And she was running through the house with this little piece of paper. I said, whoa, Mondlovu, wait a minute. What's that? She said, I got it. I said, got what? She said, my stand. I've got my stand, my house, my little property. I've got it. Maybe not even half as big as this platform. We helped her move. Oh, man, nobody's more proud of anything than Montelovu was of her stand. It was life to her. One day she came to work. Her countenance was just overcast. You could tell that she was sorrowing about something. I thought maybe another of her relatives had died. I said, you know, you got a problem. You better just open up, tell me. She said, well, I'm going to, she said, you know, there's a man who has a stand next to mine. And she said, while I'm gone each day, he is expanding his garden. And he's coming over into my yard, and he's taking more and more of my land. He's coming over right close to my house. That's where I was going to plant my mealies. That's where I was going to plant my corn. But he's taking it all up. I said, piece of cake. Get in the car. We can handle that. Yeah, we'll go back and get your land and a little bit of his. Hop in. No, she said, goodness, no, let's don't do that. Let's don't do that. I said, why not? It's making you sad. I mean, the goal in life is not to be sad, right? She said, well, goodness, she said, you understand, you see. You see, he's a very sick man. I said, hey, you better believe he's going to be sicker when I... She said, no. No, he's ill. And she said, soon, they're going to take him to the hospital. I said, great. Then we'll get all the land. She said, no. No, you see, she said, when they take him to the hospital, I believe I can tell him about Jesus. But not if we've fought. And not if I've been selfish. Die. It is the impulse of a selfless person. The cross. The crucified life. If any man will come after me, not just the super saints, not just the top of the rung guys, if any man come after me, here are my rigid requirements. Deny himself. Take up his cross. And then we'll talk about following me. We'll open it up. Look at it. Where'd you get that ambition? Whose agenda is this? That unforgiving attitude. Where did this bitterness come from? Why are you, if you're dead to the world, why are you carrying around things that Jesus died to overcome? It is a call to the cross. Here's what I'd like for us to do for a few minutes. Your president has been so gracious and said, look, these hours are at the disposal of the Spirit of God. And so we'll not be pressured or pressed upon by anything but God. And I'd like to call us to prayer. Right now, just to individual prayer. I realize that because of the nature of this service that no one need be confined. You're not locked into this place, but I will say to you that the underlying sense is that God has started a river that would flow out of this place, across this land. And what I believe He'll be doing in these few moments that we spend together, well, I don't know. I know how we have prayed. But would you do this? You may need to just turn around and kneel right where you are. You may need to come to this altar. But would you be willing to open up that suitcase where all of your feelings and all of your dreams and all of your ambitions and all of your fears and plans are, your attitudes, your habits. Would you be willing in simple prayer alone in these next few moments before God just to open it up and let the Lord from the cross, the Lord whose resurrected life came after the cross, in the light of that, would you probe through your heart and let him ask you, where did this come from? Why, after all these years, are you still harboring that? What do you plan to do with that? When are you going to drag out that attitude and lacerate somebody with it? And go to the cross with it. Embrace that which God has put in your life that enables you to die to every self-desire and enthrone Jesus as Lord. Let's just pray. You find wherever you can pray and however you can pray. We'll spend some time in prayer just now in a few moments. Ron, I'm going to ask you to come and we'll begin singing again. After that, Dr. Henry Blackaby was going to be sharing about holiness. Holiness. But would you just let God look and reveal to you where you are, what you have in your heart this morning, and die to every self-ambition, enthroning him and him alone.